Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Flowdown. Today, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by the under-17s head coach of Philadelphia Union, Mr. Peter McDonald. Peter, big warm welcome to the show.
Connor, how are things? Good to speak finally.
Yeah, I know we've had a few sound and audio issues in the past, but I think, what is this now, third time lucky, so it's a pleasure to have a
Yeah,
fellow Irishman on.
I think the last conversation we had, which was not recorded, I don't think we'll top that one today, but we'll give it a go.
We'll do our fine best. For those, I suppose, that aren't too familiar with your journey, Peter, we'll breeze through that as well. But where it all begins, you know yourself. Could you please take us through your earliest football memory?
Yeah, I think that my earliest football memory is twofold, but it's in and around the same time. My father and grandfather used to bring me up to Lansdowne Road pretty much for every home Ireland match. And I remember as a young lad, mostly misty nights, walking from Ball's Bridge, wherever we would park, or we'd give a lad a 20 to park for the evening. And then we walk down the alleyways towards Lansdowne Road, probably after my father and grandfather had a couple of pints in Paddy Cullen's. But I just remember like hearing the dart, getting into the stadium, hearing the bell when you get in there, the dart when you get in there again, and it's that's why football is a real feeling for me. And I'm sure we'll get into that in the future here on this podcast. But then alongside that, I think I was 6 years old, and I already had the bug of international football. And my father went to Italia 90. He went to the quarter final of Ireland versus Italy. And I remember me and my mother, we were staying up in Nace with my auntie until he got back. And I remember watching that game and Scilacci scoring, and I was behind the couch crying because I knew my dad was at the game and I knew how disappointed he might be. And I think that, I just remember that feeling of complete horror at Scilacci scoring that one goal against Paddy Bonner and me being behind the couch watching it. So not, a couple of really contrasting football memories, but both around international football, funny enough.
Suppose supporting both Ireland and Leeds as well lends to the feeling of disappointment.
And then, obviously my dad and grandfather. My dad was born in Leeds, so I inherited the disappointment of being a Leeds United fan. Not so much in the early days, but when they got relegated down to the Championship and then into League One, I started following Aston Villa in the Premier League for a while, which got me a bit of stick with my friends around home when you're younger, buying Savo Milosevic jerseys, but. I was always a Leeds fan, and yeah, it's still very Leedsy is how we would describe being a Leeds fan. You can never get too high and never get too low.
100%. And it's interesting there. I mean, you touch upon and you're starting to see fruits of kind of where football became a passion of yours, Peter. But where in fact did football become a vocation?
Yeah, I think, I've done a multitude of jobs in my life, Connor, and but I was always around football as like it was just omnipresent in our house, for better or for worse. My father was my coach all the time growing up. He had a bad accident when I was a year old and had to stop playing. So then he probably decided, with his addiction in football, he decided to go into coaching and so he took on coaching our groups the whole way up, myself and my brother and my sister, the whole way through our teenage life. Whether that was a good decision by him or not, it was certainly an interesting time in our house on a Sunday or a Saturday, and my mother could never get away from it. So there was always an emotion around football, whether that was the dishes not getting done or the food not getting cooked or just turning up for a meal after football and hitting the road again. There was always an emotion around it. And I think that kind of carried into, I started coaching at 16 years old myself, doing the summer camps. I used that as a summer job, the 7-Up summer camps or the Coca-Cola summer camps as they were at the time. And I used that as kind of a job to supplement other things I was doing, either working for my father or doing a bit of DJing at the time. And I kind of stuck with that until I started traveling a little bit. I went to Australia for a year and didn't really do any coaching over there. But when I came back, I got back into the coaching again while I was playing, studied at National University in Galway, got a business degree, and at about 25 years old, I left to go for the States as a camp and clinic coach. So in 2012, so that's like 14, 12 years ago now. That's kind of when I really got into it as a vocation, or at least explored the idea of being full time in football. Yeah, but it's always been around. But yeah, full time, I suppose, in 2012, when I got to Boston.
And it's an interesting one because I can definitely relate as, a fellow Irishman, especially from the West, having to move abroad to kind of pursue the footballing vocation. Is that something that hit you, I suppose, at an early age that you had to realize that maybe this is a career that you couldn't necessarily pursue at home, that you had to go abroad?
Yeah, I think that one again I explored for a while. I don't know, does everybody know exactly what they're doing at 24, 25, 26? But when I went to Boston, I was working there for a year and a half, 2 years, camps and clinics. It was a good time. It was an ability to coach at a regular, consistent basis. So you were either 5 or 6 or 7 days a week coaching. So you were certainly getting your feet wet at a grassroots level. And I decided to go back to Ireland in 2014, in fact. No, I'm dating myself wrong there. But yeah, 2010 I went to Boston, and 2012 I went home. So I'm cutting a few years off myself here and making myself feel younger. But yeah, I went back to Ireland in 2012, and I wanted to pursue a career back in Ireland. So I coached for the FAI in the Regional Emerging Talent Centres, Emerging Talent Programme it was called at the time. I started coaching for some local clubs, doing bits and pieces either coaching their first team, or I would coach their 17s and 18s. I was doing stuff for my own club, and so I was trying to piecemeal things together. Well, also, I think I had to deliver milk in the morning to make ends meet and to make sure we could pay the rent when we did go home. So, I did that for about a year and a half and 2 years too, where I was, same time I was going from Killala to Dublin to volunteer or just to shadow the international teams during tryouts or whatever. I would try and sit in on meetings for the national teams under 15s as they were doing their selections. So I was kind of like trying to piecemeal a career for myself back in Ireland. And I think, at the back end of 2014, I really said to, I took a look at it and go, okay, this is a lot more difficult here than I thought, just to get that break. So I decided to go back to the States in 2014 and take a full-time job at a football club in New Jersey. And yeah, 10 years later now, I haven't looked back since as being full-time here in the States, and have kind of worked towards where I am now.
Amazing. And it's telling to say, like, you've had a myriad of experiences that have, paved your own way, I suppose, in your own coaching journey from back at home in Killala to working with the FAI to doing those summer camps in Boston, Minnesota United, Philadelphia Union, which we'll touch upon. But if you had to boil it down, Peter, and I know it's a bit of a tough question, if we were to say there is a Peter McDonald youth development philosophy, which one of those single experiences had the biggest impact on shaping yours?
That's a great question. I don't know if one of them has singly had a great impact. I've met some great people along the way. Certainly in the FAI, in our regional centers, Paul Byrne, Leo Tierney, Niall Harrison, people like that in the West who were very open to bringing me in as a young coach, allowing me to put on training sessions, explore my own philosophy, explore my voice, in particular, which I wasn't really confident with as a younger coach. They would have had a major impact, you know, not least to say my father while I was, you know, as a coach of mine. But they would have had a major impact outside of my club at Killala FC, which I was very comfortable in developing my thoughts around how to be a coach, how to get my thoughts onto the pitch, how to reflect, things like that. I think that was a major time in my life in 2000, between 2012 and 13, where I'm like, okay, I can do this. And I think then the rest of it has shaped or continues to shape my philosophy. You know, I've had the, and I'm humble enough to know that this isn't everyone's path, but I've had to carve out a path through the different levels, and I've been lucky and I've been given chances by people who have been very, very generous to me to give me those chances. But I think coaching at the grassroots level, coaching in Boston at the very, very grassroots level, coaching in the summer camps where the kids pull their shin guards over their jeans and I'm dressing up as a pirate, as Pirate Pete, in my home club, bringing lads to Barcelona on a trip. I think all of that is shaped by the feeling that I had as a young lad about like football, you know, and what it should be, a feeling, a vehicle towards some type of development as a human being. And for me, it's a vehicle that's kind of shaped me as a human being and now as a coach. I think as I was going through the different levels at Seacoast United, becoming a director there, running a facility there, I've used football and its experiences to develop me as a person. And that's taken me down some dark roads, some bright roads, but a lot of twists and turns. And I think that continues to develop my philosophy, where I'll sit down with a player, I'll get to know players, I'll make sure that the collective is understood before the individual can flourish. Like things like that, those experiences that I've had in different parts of this country and probably shaped by my first experiences in the west of Ireland have kind of led me to here, and I hope that's got an influence on the teams that I coach now.
That's really interesting. The last time we spoke, the one thing that stuck out to me was like nothing gets lost along that coaching journey. What I mean to say is by that is there's not necessarily a perfect style of way to develop players. There's maybe most likely not a perfect environment either in which to shape and develop players. But something along taking those steps along your own development and mental journey as a coach, that nothing gets lost along the way. So for me, it was really, really illuminating to hear about you taking stuff from Killala years ago and adapting to your job at Seacoast or vice versa at Minnesota United and bringing it back to the present day at Philadelphia Union. Because for me, it's always a case of looking within oneself first as a coach before pouring back out and being able to offer up those insights and energy to players.
Yeah, I mean, if I look at why I think Philadelphia Union fits really well with me at the moment, I think about, you know, we talk about hard work and blue collar mentality here at Philadelphia Union and roll up our sleeves, and that's our core pillar before anything else can happen. I mean, I grew up watching my father fill empty seven up bottles for the players to bring to the matches, go to the dry cleaners to pick up the jerseys. He would pack the medical kit and he would be the medical man running on the pitch, putting the spray on. So I grew up watching a role model of mine working really hard to make sure that the team on the pitch can thrive. And, you know, I grew up in a household where he is still Mr. Killala FC, right? So, and that's for better or for worse in the family dynamic, right? But like without writing stuff down and being like, this is what I learned through my, that had to have stuck, you know, that had to have stuck, and that has to stick in what I every time I speak to the players here, or every time we plan a training session, or every time I try and organize, now am I really lucky to have a larger staff. That experience through my eyes as a young person has had to have an influence on what I'm doing now. And it certainly had, you know, every experience along the way, whether that was making sure that we kept a facility open up at Seacoast United during a pandemic. You know, we go to Minnesota United, the academy had just shut down. It's opening back up again. There's four of us doing a lot of the work there. You know, we're the ones out washing the kits. I remember, I don't know what town I was in, but I'm putting, you know, MLS Academy kits into a washer and a dryer. I'm back doing that again. But it's okay, because for me, that allowed me to talk about football as a feeling, as a vehicle for hard work, that we have a playing style that we want to continue to develop. And then individually, you're going to thrive in that if we continue to go back on the hard work and the playing style. So yeah, I think, Connor, nothing can never be lost, whether you write it down in a notebook or it's just part of who you are. You know, some people are good at writing down stuff and saying, I'm this because of this, this, and this, but you know, maybe it's just because of some of the experiences that you had, is that tomorrow, this is how you speak.
And I mean, you touched upon it there, obviously joining Philadelphia Union, where you've just finished your first season. And to recap it, I mean, it's been quite an outstanding success, obviously evidenced by the taking home of the U17 GAA Cup, seeing off the likes of the High Ducks, Split and Flamengo along the way. How would you describe the past year at Philly?
Yeah, I mean, it's exceeded my expectations personally. You know, I think some people can have a, despite the experience we just spoke about, right? 14 years of putting in the hours, despite the experience, when you make a jump up and take nothing away from Minnesota United, you know, I was thrilled to join Minnesota United. I was thrilled to be part of the staff there for 2.5 years. I'm really grateful for the opportunity they gave me to step into the MLS Academy setting. But when you make a jump up to the U17 coach, you know, probably one of the best jobs in the world because of the way that we structure our academy philosophy. You can maybe speak to yourself in a way where you might think, okay, am I ready for this? I'm not ready for this. I'm just Pete McDonald from Killala County, Mayo. I'm from a small village. You know, I played at a very modest level. But then, you know, you go to somewhere like Philadelphia Union, where there's a lot of eyes on that position. There's a lot of eyes on that role. There's a lot of eyes on, you know, this new guy coming in running training sessions. It didn't take me long to settle in and to understand, you know, this suits me down to the ground, as far as, you know, yeah, listen, it was a good team. There's a lot of good individuals in there. But there was a heavy focus on the way I like to see football, the way I grew up seeing football, certainly in the 90s and 2000s with the Republic of Ireland. But then also the ethic of work around it, like, and the support from the staff. So when I want to reflect on the season and sum up the season, it's probably not as surprising as I may have thought it would be if I said this is the way it's going to end at the start of the season, because of all of the inputs that I was able to discover that I had at my disposal. Incredibly hardworking staff, incredibly hardworking players, a belief in the playing style. A buy-in from me, from my coaching. But then obviously, you know, the caveat of, you know, coming into a place and not knowing, you know, if you're going to be successful, if you're going to win, is that important? How much importance is on the little piece, you know? So I think to sum up the season, yeah, we had a win at GA Cup. We got knocked out in semifinals of playoffs. People will look at that as like a fantastic first season. And I agree, But the team again was a vehicle for the individuals to flourish. We had five MLS Next Pro debuts. We had a major signing to the largest homegrown deal in the United States, and now we have to keep pushing them forward towards where meaningful minutes for Philadelphia Union, for their home club, and potentially in Europe, will be for the top players. High quality Division One programs for those that are going to play Division One, and for those with different routes to make sure that they continue to love football as long as I love football. That's kind of my goal as well for the players who are not fully focused on, you know, the professional game. So yeah, a long way around to saying really impressed with the season that we had, but there was a lot of inputs that influenced that.
You touched upon it there, of course. I mean, five players stepping up, making their MLS Next debuts. The story of Calvin Sullivan this season, it's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the list of alumni that have graduated throughout the Philadelphia Union Academy, Peter. Obviously, there's a lot being said about it with the Red Bull approach and the involvement of Ernst Tanner too. How unique would you say is the youth development philosophy at Philly?
I think unique is probably it's probably a word that I wouldn't use to describe. All the MLS academies are trying to do similar things. They're trying to find and enhance the development of good players that can maybe make an influence in their first team, or they can sell for a profit to Europe or wherever. Some do it very, very well and have been proven to do so. And I think the next step will be continuing that through innovation. Some do it with a good plan, but maybe not the same structure. And then some are trying to, you know, maybe do it by a bit of fortune and don't put as much investment into it. I think what I can say about my experience at Philadelphia Union is that the philosophy and the directive is clear from the top down. I think that that vision, and now certainly moving the academy to where it is located right beside the stadium, the school where it's located right beside the academy pitches, everything that I've experienced so far, Philadelphia Union has had a purpose behind it. So when we talk about creating a vision for young players, it was really easy. And we'll go back to like why this, I think the season was so effective. It was really easy for me to create a storytelling moment early in my coaching tenure to have the players buy into writing their names on the walls of the stadium, excuse me, because it's right there. So we're training in August in the shadows of the first team stadium. So, you know, as much as the lads will joke about it, five of them played their next pro debuts in that stadium by the end of our season. All right. And then who knows what happens with the first team and debuts from that U17 team. But certainly when they look at some debuts over the last couple of weeks, that's been happening in the first team as well. So the vision is really clear. And I think that that is something that's difficult to create. And I don't think it's unique, but I think it's really difficult to create that actual vision. It's in front of your eyes, and then for it to manifest in reality, which we've already shown. And now we have to continue to innovate to make sure that we stay on top of that, because there's a lot coming behind us that are looking at us as the pinnacle of player development, let's say, in the United States, but are well equipped with their staff, with their resources to continue to push in their own way.
And how important a skill is storytelling as a coach? Because we've spoken about this before, Peter. You're speaking about players, you know, stepping up, making the grade, making their MLS Next debuts in the very stadium that train outside in the bowls of. But in fact, I know, having spoke with you before, that storytelling, in fact, was a huge part and pivotal part of your U17 GA success as well down in Florida.
Yeah, I'll get made fun of by our players quite a lot. They call it trolling, I guess. Because I'll come up with whether they're mine or, because some I do like to create myself, or I've seen phrases like burn the ships or burn the boats, and to tie that into a story, I think it's incredibly powerful to be able to connect human feeling and emotion, we talked about earlier on, to a goal that's, or a task that's greater than the individual player themselves. But then also, because this generation is so focused on the individual, they're so focused on their own brand, to tie that back into the individual again. And I don't think you can just do that with training sessions, and I don't think you can just do that with one-on-one meetings. I think you have to be able to point to be able to point your message quite a lot towards the individual, the collective, the greater collective being the club or the city, and then back to the individual again. And yeah, that's, I mean, that's a skill that I know that I want to continue to develop, because I think it's had decent success for me everywhere I've been. And yeah, as much as some of these guys make fun of it now, I think it does have an impact on them. And I do think that some of that can, you know, those softer hidden skills can be incredibly powerful at the right time. And then there's also certain times where I say, you know, shut up. There's no need to start rambling on too much about, you know, the West of Ireland or something, if we're talking about trying to motivate lads. But yeah, I think storytelling is hugely important. And I think that you have to experience many things in life to understand storytelling. So that's, again, a part of my journey where I'm really happy that I've had the experiences that I've had. And I think that that helps my future coaching self.
And I mean, of course, it's been a season of stories too at Philadelphia Union. I mean, one of the stars of your own GAA Cup team, of course, was Cavan Sullivan, who also recently became the youngest MLS homegrown player, Peter.
Yeah, Cav's a, you want to talk about unique? Cav's a unique character. You know, he the first day you meet him, he's got an attitude that's different than everybody else. And you know, everyone in this group, and it's a really special group, have got different reasons, different whys, different little nuances in their own desire to get to where they want to go to. And to go back on your earlier question, this group is full of characters that are driven, and I'm really lucky. I don't know if we like if I'll experience this again, but it's a group of characters that are driven to succeed and to play first team football and to be cohesive at all times, and to push the boundaries of coaching and to push my coaching. And certainly in training sessions with Cav, that's what would happen. If we had a game with a rule or with a scoring system, Cav would try and break it, or he would say that this is stupid because I can do it this way. So no matter what level of preparation you had, a player like him, he would try and break the game, or he would try and look at the game in, right, you give him a tiny detail and he's going to run with that because like that's a way of cheating the scoring system. So he was always one or two steps ahead of maybe the final outcome of the game in the early the training sessions. Plus he was, I couldn't believe when it was his birthday, and he said he just turned 14. You know, he's in the school, he's 2 years above everybody else in the school, and he's 2 years above everybody else playing. You know, and his attitude on the pitch then too, he was fearless. There would be training sessions and games where he was just completely fearless. Physically, completely fearless mentally. And you could bring him in and show him his deficiencies, and he would push back a little bit here and there, but he would, you know, very often see, okay, I see these pieces, I see these pieces. And it was an interesting time with him too, because there's this whole social clamor around him. And again, my first meeting with him, he's like dabbing me up. He says, "Coach, I just hit 10K." I had no idea what he was talking about. And he was talking about his Instagram following, which I think he's probably got, you know, a couple of thousand, 100,000K. And I just think we have to continue to be careful with a player like Kevin, and to make sure that we know that he's 14 years old, and he's a prime part of his development, and he's in a great place right now with the first team and the second team squads. And I know that everyone's paying a lot of attention, and probably a lot of people are looking at him wanting him to fail. And I think as a club, then we've got a responsibility, and we do a great job of that, of now developing the individual and the collective. And Cav's no exception to that too. So, yeah, delighted for him. It's obviously a heavy weight he's going to carry, but his character, his family backing, his dynamic in his family, certainly keep him grounded. And I think that that's a real important piece for him too.
And obviously seeing, you know, in youth development, seeing one of your peers claim with such adulation going on to achieve such success, you know, in and amongst being a youth team player, can be, you know, obviously can be quite a stressful time. You know, coupled with rising expectations inside the squad for many of these players and their own individual developmental journeys, how do you manage the correct balance between challenge and support, coupled with these raising expectations, Peter?
Yeah, I think that that's a major learning point for me this year. And I'm certainly still on that. Like, these are the type of things I'm writing down in my book right now, or my journal right now at the end of the season. Because when you have a story like Cavan, and when you have him, you know, growing up with his mates, playing with the same players that are now on different teams all the way through, it's human nature for them to want the same thing at the same time, because they're all very good players. But now you hit the commerce part of football, which you want to keep away from young players as much as possible, and so that they continue with the joy of football. And you know, that for me has been one of the biggest balancing factors in the group dynamic of this group. Players making sure that, you know, they're very oriented around the coach being as fair to them as he was to everybody else. So they'll push on, the players will push on, you know, treating everybody the same. And I haven't always, as much as you try to do that, in an environment like this, where there's so many high-level players and you have so many individual conversations, it can be perceived as there's a bit of difference here. And yeah, there is, because you're trying to take the conversations you've had with that individual on the side, the video you've had, the individual meetings, the time you've reprimanded him but not told the group, you know, different things like that, where you're piecing it all together. But in a training session, it might be like saying, you're not holding him to the same accountability as you're holding me. So that's definitely been a massive learning curve for me, in a group that's extremely talented, with what happened, Cavan and his signing, the Manchester City news, all of that, because to him, or to the rest of the players, his mates in school, the guy that he's still Cavan, and why does Cavan get this opportunity, and I don't at this stage because I've been doing really well. That's where we had a little bit of difficulty in the weeks prior to that, to the signing. And obviously then players start to make their Union 2 debuts. And then why didn't I make it? So that's the transition phase of U17 football, that we have to educate the players and parents about. Not everybody's pathway is the same.
And it's certainly an interesting one, Peter. And there's one quote I always bring it back up to, and it's actually not a quote, it's really a formula. It was when Julian Nagelsmann, he was speaking about being a young coach years ago at Hoffenheim, and they were speaking to him about the importance of tactics and whatnot. And he kind of belittled the question. He went back at the reporter and he says, listen, you know, this job in football, it's 30% actual football. It's 70% communication and social competence. And it's interesting you're speaking about there, or about all the boundaries and all the kind of balancing acts that you have to do as a U17 coach. Just curious to learn a bit more about how your own leadership style has had to evolve, especially with this new generation.
Yeah, I think When I come into this role, I had primarily dealt with younger players, even 15s, which, under 14s, under 15s, which are really, you can develop the group, and they want to be attached to a group, right? So they want to be attached to a meaning, a group, a club. So you can always just tell a story around, this is the football club, this is what it stands for. If you want to be into this, you're into it. And if you don't, you can be out, So, and then they never really will push the boundaries too much around those ages because they just wanted to feel part of a group because they're trying to develop an identity and they don't know how to develop an individual one yet. So it's like, okay, I'm gonna have this group identity and this is who I am. And that's when they start to put the stuff on their social media pages, all that type of stuff. But then when they move from 15 into 16s, 17s, and certainly now with this new generation of branding online, and I think the United States is a different youth soccer market than anywhere else because of the branding of the individualism, and it's going to make it really difficult for young coaches coming through. And now that player wants to be an individual because they either have agents, they have their parents saying that they have to be, or the online, the social sphere is telling them they have to be individual. And then we have to try and foster the collective whilst developing the individual, because ultimately that's where we want, like, teams don't make first team debuts, individuals do. But the team has to be a vehicle. So it's that balance of making sure that, okay, Cavan signed and I think I'm as good as Cavan, right? For example, and that's what his teammates should think. They should be driven by the success of others and as good as those around them. And we believe that. So, but then to be able to try and convince them to do what the team needs at certain times, that isn't always successful. And maybe it shouldn't happen, right? So that's another debate where you have a game model at 17s that mirrors the first team. Maybe you want more adherence to the game model at, individually at the first team level than you do at 17s level. You want them to explore with the affordances that they've been given a little bit more so that they can become a little bit more of a complete player. That's, I think, maybe a conversation we can go into in the future. But that balance of continuing to tell a story around the team, and the team is going to continue to be a vehicle for your individual development. It just might not be today or tomorrow. I think that's a really difficult piece, and you have to connect with the player, and the individual has to try and trust you, and the individual has to try and trust that you're in charge and out for their development, whilst they have all of these inputs, whether that's from, likes on social media to their agents telling them, you should be doing this, this, and this, or maybe they're hearing from other people that they don't fit the system. All of these inputs can be difficult for a coach to balance when they're trying to drive the collective in the team, knowing, because you're confident in what the club does and in the playing style and what the club has previously done, knowing that if the team performs well, then the individual will flourish inside that. I think now, considering the new generation of player, that's the most difficult aspect of coaching, in my opinion, at the moment. But certainly at the youth level, and I think it's probably more once they pass under 15s, under 16s, maybe, to when they enter into the second team environment, because they're constantly told it's brand, it's brand, it's brand, it's brand. And brand, as you know, is individual, when it comes down to being a player. And you can see that by the online presence. So I had to be aware of this. Personally, I've had to be on top of some players about posting certain things from training sessions, and that's got some kickback from some players. But I've had to be aware of it and maybe use it as like my own storytelling piece, and maybe joke around with it a little bit just to see, because they're pushing the boundaries to see how much I'll be able to adapt to them inside the training sessions, or They'll push the boundaries to see how much I might, you know, I might give preference to their, you know, to their behavior inside a training session. So it's that constant dance with making sure the collective is quality and developing the individual inside that game model that's unique to us in the league. I think that's the dance that I've been toying with the most over the last season. And, you know, this group of players, as unique as they are, I think they're the ones who've kind of set the standard of how I need to adapt into the future.
And I can imagine too, as a coach, as a leader of the group, it can be quite easy to kind of lose yourself amongst all of it. So, you know, obviously, and knowing you well, amply, the art of jiu-jitsu is a firm grounding activity of yours. For those of you, I suppose, that are listening, don't know too much about the art form of jiu-jitsu, Peter, how would you say that has helped you as a person, as a coach, as a leader?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a good segue into what we've been talking about, because I do think that as you go through the metamorphosis of coaching, of wearing different cloaks, of dealing with different personalities, I do think that you know, as you said, you could lose yourself. You could stray away from your values. You could stray away from your, you know, am I saying the right things? You doubt yourself, you know. But the one thing that I've taken from jiu-jitsu is that unless you're your authentic self, you're gonna get beaten. So my focus in jiu-jitsu, or the focus in jiu-jitsu, has got to be 100% in the moment, and 100% the attention has to be on the art, the being as true to the art and the behavior as possible. So if you're trying to be something you're not in jiu-jitsu, it's generally your focus is somewhere other than the moment and what's happening, then more than likely it's not going to end well at the end of the round, or three or four times in the round. So I think I've taken a lot of things from jiu-jitsu, one of them being, okay, I'm more calm in stressful situations, because jiu-jitsu is probably one of the most physically stressful situations you can have voluntarily. Maybe that says something about my mindset sometimes, that I put myself into these situations three or four times a week. But I also, it's also allowed me to realize that authenticity and attention and focus and intentionality is really important in coaching. And then if you focus in on those pieces, that, you know, the players can feel that. The players can feel, they can feel like you're not being somebody else just to satisfy somebody else's needs, the club needs, like you're all in. And I think that helps then maybe bridge that gap. I think it helps bridge that gap between, you know, the storytelling and the development on the pitch, so that they trust, okay, maybe it's not my time at the moment, but if I keep working this way because of how I've been spoken to by the coaching staff, then it will be someday. We hope that's for all the players, but, you know, as we talk about the commerce of football, it's not always the case, but you hope that you leave them with some authenticity that they can drive their future self from. Yeah, jiu-jitsu is a major part of my coaching now. And I think it's going to continue to be.
Really interesting. Prior to that, you spoke of it being nearly like a dance. So for me, there's a fine dance there between the art of intentionality and actually execution. And, you know, as you've evidenced over the past season, sometimes a whole year can go by and you feel like you've accomplished nothing, or it's gone by and it's been the most stressful time of all. And sometimes, more often than not, in football, you can feel like you're in a washing machine. So it's interesting there you speak about jiu-jitsu being a grounding activity, and it helps you kind of navigate that segue between intentionality and execution. How else, Peter, in an environment such as football, especially in this country here in the United States, you ultimately create and cultivate the conditions for your own personal growth?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. I think this year has been some of my largest personal growth in like drive and motivation and trying things to continue to create like little small moments of motivation for players and for groups and for staffs. So, you know, you talked about Nagelsmann saying that 30% is tactics. I 100% align with that, because, you know, if we didn't go through as a staff this year at each of these events, some of the activities we went through with the players, I don't know would we be as successful with our playing style on the pitch. From a management point of view, I really pushed myself to think about ways, and shorter ways because of the generation we're dealing with, to make the team and the building of the team more interactive and more fun for the player, so that the individual can thrive. Because ultimately, again, we're in an individual thriving sport, but we need the team as a vehicle for it. So this year has been like, with the success of this team, with the quality that's in this group, with the individuals we have in this group, I felt like before every event, or even before every game, I had to come up with something or continue with something with a little twist on it that would be interesting for the players to continue to develop their cohesiveness and their togetherness. Some I've learned from the course that I'm on, the French course, some that I've taken from seeing some things online, some that I've taken from quotes, added them into like bringing the lads to jiu-jitsu and using that as a bit of fun for a while. I think that aspect, the management aspect of a group, and I think it'll have to change if I ever go into, you know, men's football. How do I adapt what I've done before? Because it's, some of it is quite, you know, fun and juvenile. Like post-it note exercises where they have to write in each other's backs, be critical to each other. They don't know, you know, for example, they don't know who's writing the note, but it's on your back by the time you finish it. And then it can be a critical point, something that you want the player to do during this event that they haven't done previously for the team, or something that you don't want them to do. So I learned that from the French course, or I've adapted that from what they did at the French course, and use those, you know, use those natural breaks, either going to traveling to events or after events or a break in the season, to develop my management of groups and to really keep a talented group of individuals motivated around the larger cause of the club. I think I've really dug into that as part of my own development, you know, this season. I think that in this country, we can forget about the fact that football is still a club-orientated sport. It's, you know, it's certainly in development. I think we have a job and we have a responsibility to create spirit, to create history, and to create attachment, so that when young players, you know, in 15 years' time, they support Philadelphia Union and they don't support Manchester United or Manchester City, you know, That's really what we still have a responsibility to do, even though we're already in this massive sport business of youth development and youth exports, and we as coaches have still to develop an attachment to the football club. And I think if we do that with the facilities that we have, with the resources that we have, with the World Cup coming up, with the speed of popularity of football in this country, then we'll develop the game at a much quicker rate here than they did in England, in Spain, wherever, I think, because of the population density, because of the love for winning and for competition in this country. But I would say that I have challenged myself to make sure that I keep these really talented individuals motivated by creating different management techniques throughout the year. So I don't know, it's a long-winded way of saying how I challenge myself, but
I think from Paddy Cullen's in Ball's Bridge to Jiu-Jitsu mats in Philadelphia, we've covered a lot of bases today, Peter. But for those that are listening that are that slightly bit inspired to throw out a similar path to yourself, what would be the one bit of key advice you'd have for them?
I think, like everything else, I probably ha wouldn't have one bit of advice. I would say that you have to take risks and you have to do things other than football to be able to create a story for yourself. Because I think when you can create a story for yourself and that you can share that story with others, some call that empathy. I call it just relationism, relationships. It's another brand of football. Players playing closer together pick up cues from each other a lot better than players playing far apart, right? That's the theory on these two styles. I think that with our school that we have at YSC, I've learned a lot from players who are best mates. I think coaches can take a lot from that they have to relate to their players. And certainly, the higher the level you go up, regardless of a playing career, players are human beings. They want to relate to people in their group. And if you're a leader in their group, then you better have some unique way of relating with those inside that group to get the best out of them. Or you better be able to share the highs and the lows with them because you might have gone through them as well. And I don't think you get those without taking risks and without sticking your neck out and having a developing a story for yourself.
Peter McDonald, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Connor. Appreciate it.